It's time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston, or perhaps even 100.3 FM. If you're in the Metro Boston area, you can check in with us there, or of course online at wrolradio.com, or any of the streaming radio sites, you'll find us there. And, of course, you can find past programs on my podcast site, which is johnfpaul.podomatic.com, or you can check out the Car Doctor podcast Facebook page, where there's usually a link to everything. So you can check it out and find everything you need to find right there. So today, we are going to be talking with Jim Graham. He is the global manager of Ford Driving Skills for Life. It's a good, safe driving event that is going to be taking place up in North Andover next weekend. We'll be talking to him about that in a little bit. And we'll also be talking with Bob Tasca from Tasca Ford, and Bob Tasca III, the funny car driver. We should be talking with him shortly. So we have that planned. We are going to be reviewing the Nissan Armada, which is a big Nissan SUV. We'll be doing that. We have a lot of stuff in the news. We're going to be giving away a pair of tickets to the Newport Boat Show. So that will be coming up. So we have a lot of stuff going on today. So lots of stuff. Lots of stuff to do. Lots of things to talk about. And if you probably didn't notice, it's also the 10 millionth Mustang coming up. We got a lot of things going on.
10 million of the Mustangs. Yes, it's a strange voice that's back on the air.
Yeah, I know. Hey, it's Dennis. We'll get to you in a bit.
Okay.
All right. But right now, why don't we get to Bob Tasca? The fastest guy that I know, at least, Bob Tasca III. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, John. How you doing?
I'm doing just great. Hey, you got all kinds of excitement going on down at one of your stores today, right?
Yes, this is our 21st annual Mustang and Lodge Music event. I tell you, it's something that we started many years ago, and it's a wonderful event. Admission is two canned goods benefiting the Rhode Island Food Bank. We're going to have hundreds of show cars out here. I got my race team in town. We're going to have the funny car out. 2 o'clock this afternoon, we're going to start it up and hit the throttle a couple of times. It's always an amazing show, and we always get an amazing turnout.
And you know, I'm about 50 miles away from you. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be able to hear you start that up.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we get a lot of first timers that come out to this show, and when we start the car up, I always explain, you know, find an exit strategy, small kids, protect your ears, and you know, some people are looking at you like you're a little out of your mind, and then they hear it start up. And they absolutely can't believe the energy. And then when we hit the throttle, I literally have to have three guys, two on the back and one on the front, that are standing, holding the chassis down, because when you just crack the throttle, it jumps a couple inches off the jack stand. It's something to see. If you've never seen it and you're near Cranston, Rhode Island, Tasca Ford, come on by at 2 o'clock. We're going to start it up. We've got live music. The Driftwoods are here, and it's going to be a fun afternoon.
Let's talk about that hot rod a little bit. You know, people always talk about regular cars 0 to 60 times, and the latest factory Mustang, you know, is pretty quick 0 to 60. Your car is how fast 0 to 60?
Half second, 0 to 60. Yeah, people don't even believe it. I mean, it's something that you have to see to believe. I mean, I've had 2,000-plus runs in one of these cars, and I still can't believe as a human being in the car at the finish line that knows when to stop it. But it'll go 0 to 60 and a half seconds, 0 to 100 in about 8-tenths of a second. And then, just last weekend, we went 3.9 seconds, 322 miles an hour in 1,000 feet, which was good enough to be number two qualifier in Indianapolis.
And I remember years ago, I was talking to Don Garlitz, and he told me the time he broke 200 miles an hour, and even he said he didn't think he would see 300 miles an hour, and now guys are doing it pretty routinely.
Well, not only that, we're doing 322, 330 miles an hour at 1,000 feet, so that's 320 feet, you know, shorter than where they were at a quarter mile, so it's extraordinary. I mean, I certainly believe that we're hitting some of the limits of what we can do, not so much from what we're able to do, but from what the sanctioning body, NHRA, is taking some pretty aggressive measures to slow us down because we just continue to break speed records. And, you know, at some point, you know, it becomes a safety issue just trying to stop these cars.
Well, you had a little bit of excitement last weekend, right?
Yeah, I tell you, you know, we were so disappointed. The car ran lights out. We were number two qualifier on Friday night. We were one of the quickest cars all day on Sunday. And then Monday morning was eliminations at the biggest race of the year. And, you know, we were running number 15 qualifier. I had a huge starting line advantage, and the car's really pulling hard, you know, early in the run. And then it just started to lose traction. And, you know, a freak accident broke an intake valve. And in one of these cars, when you break an intake valve with almost 5 gallons of nitromethane that's in the manifold and the supercharger, they'll go bang. And we had a monster explosion. Still almost won the race on fire, 300 going through the lights. But that's what these cars are. They're very unpredictable. They're violent, violent cars to drive and to see. But unfortunately for us, it ended our day. But trust me, this team's made a lot of progress this year. We've got a great race car. We've qualified in the top five, you know, I think four out of the last six races. So we're going to be a team to reckon with these last six races of the year.
Yeah, no. I saw some of the video of that, and that's not for the faint of heart.
No, I tell you, I've had my share too. It's been a tough year for me with explosions. I think I went 10 years driving with maybe, you know, two or three big explosions, and, you know, this year I had five, you know, my worst being in Richmond, Virginia, earlier this summer. You know, that one was bad because it lit the oil on fire. If it can just burn the nitro off, the fire normally goes out pretty quick, but when it lights the oil on fire, then you're in for a you know, pretty serious ride. But hey, you know, that's, you know, I've done this a long time. I know what to do. I trust the safety equipment and, you know, NHRA Safety Safari. You know, before that car comes to a stop, those guys are in fire suits, you know, diving in after you. So we got all the protocol to keep us safe.
Yeah, really. And let's talk a little bit about Tasker Ford down in Cranston. About a month ago, the 10 millionth Mustang, I guess, rolled off the assembly line. And you've always said, you know, you're a Ford kid. You'll always be a Ford kid, and you have your mod shop down there. If the newest Mustang isn't hot enough, you can help them out, right?
Well, I can tell you one thing. You can come down today and see some pretty unbelievable Mustangs. And for me, one of those 10 million Mustangs was my first car when I turned 16. My grandfather had it built for me, and a pretty cool story. Just a few months ago, I found the car, believe it or not, on Craigslist. And it was in as good a condition as the day I sold it. I'm looking at the car now. I can't believe the condition the car is in. So we have that on display. We have some of the newest Mustangs on display. We got some old Mustangs on display. And we got some really, really hopped up 1,000 horsepower, you know, late model Mustangs that my brother actually just built one for himself. It's just incredible the power that we can make out of these, you know, these new Mustangs.
Yeah, the new Mustangs, as good as they were when they came out, they keep getting better and faster every year. They seem to ride better, they handle better, and on top of that, they're getting great fuel economy.
It's unbelievable. I mean, what they've done with that car, I think it's a testament. You know, there's still 10 million of them. Not many vehicles can say that are on the road. But it's the number one selling sports car, you know, since it came into existence, and they just keep getting better and better. And if you haven't driven one, you really got to get inside one of these cars. They're incredible.
So back to the show. What time is it? And again, price of admission. A little bit of food for the Rhode Island Food Pantry.
Yeah, we've supported the food pantry for almost 20 years. It's 10 to 4. There'll be live music. We'll start right around 10:30, 11 o'clock, and 2 o'clock we'll start up the funny car right around 2 o'clock. You'll get to see the guys actually throughout the day you know, assemble the car. The guys are rolling it out of the trailer now, so it's kind of a show just to see them put it together. And then we'll start it up at 2, and admission is 2 canned goods to benefit the Rhode Island Food Bank.
And let me know if you see my boss, Mark Shaw, wandering around. I know he's got 3 Mustangs now.
I'm sure he'll be wandering around. He's a big Mustang aficionado, and he's always here.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday. I know you got a lot going on today, and I truly appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. That was Bob Tasker. I always called him Bobby Tasker, but Bob Tasker III, his grandfather, Bob Tasker Sr., when I first met him, I met him years ago, and he was talking about how he worked with Ford and how he did this and how he did that, and I honestly thought it was a little over-exaggerated. And then I was talking to somebody from Ford, and they're like, "Oh no, we consult with him on a lot of things. He was the one who designed the first Taurus SHO. He's the one who put some hot engines in some cars. He really brought excitement to Ford, and he just a real interesting but low key guy at the same time. When we were talking about quality of cars once." He was, and this was, must be 15, 20 years ago, and we were talking about how the Ford Taurus did compared to something like a Toyota Camry. And he said, you know, the problem was, the problem he wanted to address with Ford, the perception of quality with a Camry from 1 to 10 is a 10. The perception of quality for Ford Taurus might have been a 5. The reality of it was the Camry was probably an 8, and the Taurus was probably a 7. So they were actually really close together, but it was that perception of quality is what it was. And his focus then, among other things, was to try to really work with Ford to try to bring up their perception of how good the cars are. And all cars are good today. There's part of it. I mean, you just go out and buy anything, and they're so much better, even though a lot of people say they don't build cars the way they used to. That's a good thing in a lot of ways, because some cars from years ago, you bring a car home, brand new, go out of warranty, and it was broken afterwards. So, but anyway, as you pointed out, it's the best-selling sports car in the last 50 years. It was featured in more movies and has more Facebook followers than any other car in the world. The 10 millionth Ford Mustang is a high-tech 460-horsepower 2019 Wimbledon White GT V8 six-speed convertible, saluting VIN number 1. The first serialized Mustang was a 1964-and-a-half Mustang that featured 164-horsepower V8 with a three-speed transmission. So there's been more than 60 Ford Mustang owners in all the model years are assembling for a tribute, and this was recently out in Dearborn, Michigan. I met a guy out in Detroit, and he may have been one of the guys I was talking with about Bob Tasker with, he works for Ford. He owns every year of every Mustang made. So I don't know where he keeps them all. Got a big garage somewhere, but he keeps them somewhere, and I'm sure he has a lot of them. But Tasker Ford, they own quite a few different types of dealerships now, but the Ford dealership is I think nearest and dearest to their heart. And I know when we had Marty Shore on, who wrote the book Ford Total Performance, he did a lot of work with the Tasker folks at the time, and Tasker Ford's a big deal. You heard his voice a little bit ago, Dennis.
Hi.
I
was actually watching a movie last night where it showed all three, the main character had all three of the big three American-made cars. Yeah, the first one was the Mustang.
Yep.
The second one, I believe, was a mid-70s model Chevy Nova.
Okay.
I believe. Mm-hmm. And the last one that he drove was a Dodge something or other. Dodge
Charger?
Charger, probably.
Challenger?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think it was a Charger, yeah.
What was the movie?
John Wick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was watching. I'm like, hey, that's really cool.
So this was the new John Wick?
No.
The old John Wick?
No, I was introducing my boy to the first one so we can watch the second one.
A lot of violence in that, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
he's a high schooler now.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He's not six anymore. No. Okay. I forgot. So where you been?
I've been to, the first Saturday I had off, we had tentative plans to go to Washington, D.C. Those fell through, so I still just took it off. The second week, I went to Canobie Lake with some friends. And then the last 2 weeks, I was traveling
Is Canobie Lake where you're supposed to stay out of the hot tubs now, or what was that?
Canobie Lake Park, park. But there's hot tubs.
The hotel's up around there? Is that where you get Legionnaire's disease?
I guess so. I don't know. That's something that happened while I was up in California.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, I was either traveling to or coming back from California on the Saturday. So,
you've been to California before, right?
Yes. But this time was awesome. This time I got to see every Batmobile ever made.
Every Batmobile ever made? Where did you see those?
I saw them at the Warner Brothers studio. Almost every Batmobile. They don't have the rights to the TV show Batmobile.
Really?
But every other one that's been in any movie has been it.
They don't have a reproduction just because?
No, they don't have the rights to it.
Huh.
It's a CBS-owned program.
Huh. Because there's somebody, speaking of Rhode Island, there's somebody in Rhode Island that has a reproduction Batmobile. It looks pretty good, yeah.
People can do things, but studios have the licensing thing.
Did they have the other Bat stuff, like the Bat motorcycle?
They had the Batgirl motorcycle. There was the one that came out of the Batmobile Dark Knight.
I don't know if I like that one. I don't know if I like that Batmobile.
The Tumbler?
Too much of a tank looking thing.
That was my favorite one. I love that one. The Bat plane that was in Batman and Robin.
So you did that. I saw on your Facebook page also, you seem to go out to eat a lot.
Yeah. Well, actually, the first two nights, my brother's boyfriend cooked for us. So it looked like restaurant food.
It looked like restaurant food. Yes, it did. Yes, it did. But also, it seems like you did go out to eat a fair amount, too.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Yeah,
because we're on vacation, and those calories don't count.
Wow. Okay. All right. I've only been to California once, and it was just this year. And I went to I was in L.A. and I was kind of downtown L.A. like financial area.
There's nothing there.
And I was disappointed because there was no car culture. You know, the car culture, I guess, is all like Orange County and up that way, or down that way, or wherever it is. And, I saw everyday looking cars that looked as beat up as they do in downtown Boston.
Yeah.
I was pretty disappointed.
Yeah, there's nothing too much. You have to go to the beaches.
Yeah.
The beaches have the cars. Yeah. If you went down to Monte Carlo. Now I can't think of the name of it.
Someplace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go down by the pier there's mm-hmm. a lot of cars and a lot of different culture down there. Long Beach,
yep.
And then as you get closer to the studios, up in Burbank, there's a lot of different kinds of cars up there that are really cool.
See any celebrities?
We saw a few. We saw William H. Macy from a real far distance.
Yep.
We saw, I can't think of the woman. There was two women that we saw. Some of my neighbors were out there at the same time we were, so we all met up and did the studio tour together at Warner Brothers. And the teenage boys recognized one young actress who I can't remember her name. I can't remember the show that she was on. And then we saw another actress, our tour bus literally turned around the corner, and there she was standing there getting ready to film her show. It's the actress. She's now on a show called Breaking Up Together, which was going into season two.
Yep.
She was really friendly. It was really cool.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody who was out there, and this was years ago, and they said they were just at the supermarket, and like Madonna was buying beer.
That's happened to me. One of the first time we went out there, we saw, her last name's Cross. I can't think of her first name right now. She was on, at the time, it was Desperate Housewives.
Okay.
Marcia Cross. That's her name. We saw her at, we were walking down Rodeo Drive, and Libby wanted to go into a coach store, and we walked into the coach store, and there she was. And then last time I was out there, not this past time.
Sorry about that. by the coach store. Did you spend $1,000 while you were there?
No, she just wanted to go in and check it out, see if it was any different than the coach store at the Rentham Outlets, and it wasn't. So last time we were out there, it was me, my mom, and my brother, and we were up in Beverly Hills again. And crossing the street was, Zorro the Gay Blade, really tan, always tan. Now he does the Kentucky,
Kentucky Fried Chicken commercials. Who was that?
Yeah.
We that saw guy.
Him.
That guy, yeah.
And he was just crossing the street. He was really nice. He was really accommodating, took pictures with me, my mom, and my brother, and he was... I told him one of my favorite movies is Zorro the Gay Blade, and he told me all bunch of stories about it. It was fantastic. He was a fantastic. Now I can't think of his name. George Hamilton.
George Hamilton. Of course, George Hamilton. How could you not remember George Hamilton? Yeah. See, when I've been in New York a couple times, I've kind of run into celebrities, and the only one who I ever actually sort of stopped, and it wasn't me, it was Jack Klugman, the original Odd Couple, Jack Klugman, and only because I was walking by and there was this older couple, probably my age now, who wanted to take a picture with them. And they said to me, would you mind taking... So, you know, I was there, and he seemed very nice, very accommodating, and looked like the guy from The Odd Couple, you know, kind of wrinkly raincoat, you know, just kind of an interesting guy.
We also went to San Diego for a couple days. That was really fun. And then finally we ended up in Palm Springs, which
Palm
is
Springs.
Really amazing.
I've heard that. I've heard that.
If you ever go out there, do the Skyway tram that goes up the mountain. Mm. I don't like heights, and I don't like things that spin. This both is really high, and the floor spins around, but at a really slow pace, so that by the time you get up to the top of the mountain or back down from the top of the mountain,
you've seen the other way.
You've seen kind of around 360 degrees. That was my day. That was my week.
Yep. So I said we would be talking to Jim Graham. He is the global manager of Ford Driving Skills for Life, and he's on the phone with us. Good morning, Jim, and welcome to the Car Doctor program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's do a quick rundown of what Ford Driving Skills for Life is and how long you've been doing this.
Well, we've been doing Ford Driving Skills for Life for 15 years, and we're actually in 43 countries, and we've trained over 1 million people. And basically what we are is a step beyond driver's education for newly licensed drivers, and we provide advanced driving skills for free for teens and their parents. And the goal is to try to give teens more experience and also talk about things that they shouldn't be doing, like distracted and impaired driving.
Well, that's a good point. Here in Massachusetts, recreational marijuana is now legal. Do you go into the whole aspect of drug driving?
Yes, we do. We work with the police officers, and we work on impaired driving, both drunk and drug driving. We do some in-car exercises with our instructors, but we also have a drug suit and a drunk suit that we use outside of the car, and so we get involved with that very heavily. So, you know, those are things that are creeping up all over the country, actually, and it's something that obviously we shouldn't be doing while you're driving, shouldn't be doing probably any time, but so we do focus on that, too.
Do you find when you're talking to your kids and your instructors are talking to kids, a lot of them now would never think of getting into a car with a drunk driver, but one that has just smoked pot, they don't think that's a big deal?
Well, that's exactly right. And there's not a lot of research out there, unfortunately, on the whole subject of marijuana and driving. But, you know, a lot of people have the perception that it's actually safer. Maybe people are they're just a little more relaxed, but... You know, we don't believe that's the case. I know in Colorado, for example, Washington, where it's legal, they've seen some real adverse effects. So it's something that we have to learn more about, but we know it's something they shouldn't be doing behind the driving once they've done that. So we definitely talk about that to teens and to their parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Then when it comes to what goes on during the program now, and how long is the program?
Well, we do the program on the weekends. We'll be actually in North Andover on September 15th and 16th. We have four sessions, so we have two a day. There's a morning session that starts about 8 and goes till noon, and one in the afternoon that goes about 1:30 to 5. And we put them through essentially four different exercises. We do an exercise on vehicle handling, where they learn how to control a car that has oversteer or the back end tends to slide, like if you're on snow and ice. We do a hazard recognition exercise where they learn how to react if something happens in front of them, such as, you know, a car has something happens in front of them, a car, truck, something happens. We do an exercise on speed and space management. And then we also do the things they shouldn't be doing. So we do exercises on impaired driving, exercises on distracted driving, and then we talk about things like bicycle safety, car and bicycle safety. We talk about railroad crossing, and we, you know, it's a really active 4 hours. We also have a parent session for parents that come out. We encourage them to come out too. So it's a full 4 hours, and it's a great time, and it's free.
You know, whether it was free or not, it's a very educational type of program where I think a lot of people, and you brought it up, you know, people go out, they get their driver's license, but they don't really learn how to drive. It takes, 5 or 6 years before you become a reasonably competent driver. And a lot of times in that kind of learning phase, novice drivers don't even know what ABS brakes feel like.
Well, that's exactly right, and we actually have an exercise on that. There's a whole lot of technology in vehicles now that a lot of people don't know how to use properly, and it's designed to provide vehicles to be safer. But so we talk about that also. But you're right, driver's education over the last 15 years has really changed. In many cases, it's been pulled out of schools. Parents have to pay for it in many cases. And it is basic driver's education, though. They do a good job about things like signs and basic driving rules. But there's not a lot of hands-on driving. So this gives them an opportunity to really sit down with professional drivers and talk about some new things they haven't learned. And, you know, I always like to say learning to drive successfully is a lifelong learning experience. People can always learn more. So that's why we encourage parents to come out, too. So it's just a great opportunity.
It really is. And when you're sort of done with your program and talk to the students afterwards, the parents afterwards, what's your typical reaction?
Well, they're actually really pleased they came out. It's kind of funny because when we start off, we have an opening session, and most of the teens have been signed up by their parents. We understand that, and they're not really sure what they're getting into. But when they're done, they're really happy they came out, and they really learned some things. And it's just a nice thing to see because, you know, it is on a weekend, and they don't have to come out and do this, but once they do come out, they really appreciate it, and they tell their friends, and that's really how we get people to come to these events. It's word of mouth, and, you know, in 15 years, we haven't had one complaint. It's just all positive, so it's really rewarding. We're really lucky we get to work on such a program like this.
And when you mentioned technology, there's a lot of technology in cars today. ABS brakes have been around seemingly forever now. But how about some of the other technology? During the program, do you go over some of the other advanced technology that's in some of the newer cars?
Yes, we're just starting to incorporate that into our program because now most vehicles, I don't care what brand they are, have things like lane keeping, advanced collision warning systems, a lot of really neat technologies that really can help save lives if people know how to use it. So we are starting to go over that now, and it's something like, for example, we've had MyKey on our cars for years, and I know other manufacturers have similar things where a parent can program a key so that they can do things like limiting speed if they aren't buckled up, limiting radio noise, radio volume if they're not buckled up, things like that. So there's really great technologies out there, and most all the manufacturers have it now. So we are incorporating that into our program, and something we're going to continue to focus on more and more because vehicles are semi-autonomous now in many cases, and we want to make sure they know how to use this technology so it works in their favor, not against them.
And what kind of cars or SUVs or whatever are they going to be in?
Well, we obviously put them in. They're new Ford products. We typically have vehicles we can put four people in, including the instructor. So, you'll have Fusions, you'll have some SUVs, things like that. But brand new Ford vehicles, the Mustangs, obviously we use that for the vehicle handling. So it's also a fun opportunity for young people to get to drive new vehicles. It's not a sales program, but it is some opportunity for me to get, for the first time ever, to get in a brand new vehicle with a really qualified professional instructor. So that's a nice opportunity for them, too.
Well, I was going to say it sounds like it's a big learning experience, but it sounds like it's a lot of fun, too.
Well, it is because they get to do things in an enclosed environment that they're not going to be doing with their parents' vehicles. There's no high-speed exercises, but, it's okay if they spin out when they're doing the vehicle handling course because we want them to learn how to control that if they were to do that on snow and ice, for example. So it is fun, and the instructors let them have a little bit of fun, and then they'll show them how to do it the right way. So it's an opportunity for them to get to do some things that they wouldn't normally get to do. And I really can't praise our instructors enough. They're so qualified, and it's nice for them to get to be behind the wheel of somebody that's really done something in terms of driving with their life. And all of our instructors are just outstanding. And it's great for the parents, too, because most parents have not had any advanced driver education. And So it's a really nice effort. It's a good time to parents and teens to bond, come out together. It's a lot of fun. We make it fun for them, and they learn an awful lot.
No, it sounds like a great program. And how you said it's next weekend. How do people sign up for it?
They can just go to drivingskillsforlife.com. That's our website, drivingskillsforlife.com. And there's an event section, and they'll see one that says North Andover, Massachusetts. And they can sign up for the morning or afternoon session on each day. And if there's any questions they have, there's a contact area there, and there's spots open. And it's just a great opportunity, and we just look forward to seeing them out there. I'll be there myself, and I always enjoy coming to these events, and just a great opportunity for everybody to have a great time and learn some great things and hopefully save some lives.
And like you said, it's fun, it's free, and you get to learn something. So it sounds like a trifecta of winning to me. So,
well, yeah, it's really it's a win-win for everybody, and it's an exciting time. We look forward to it. We always love coming out there, and I think parents, if you have a newly licensed teen, I don't care if they're 15, 16, even 18, whatever it is, there's nearly no upper age limit. Get them out there, go enjoy it, and I think they'll be really pleased they came out.
And I was just peeking at your website. Even if you can't make the event, there's a lot of great educational pieces on the site as well.
Well, that's exactly right. The website, drivingskillsforlife.com, we have an area called the Academy, which essentially is about a two-hour session that mimics what we do in the hands-on program. So if you can't make it to the hands-on program, go through the online Academy with your team. Again, it takes about 2 hours, and it starts with very basic things such as proper hand and seat position and goes into things such as how to control a vehicle that is in an oversteer position to, things we've been talking about here. So it's a great opportunity. There's also a parent-teen contract on there. That those things do work. A lot of great information on there. So that's drivingskillsforlife.com.
And if a group, a city, a town, whatever, wants to bring Driving Skills for Life to their community, is there information on the site as well?
Yes, there's a contact area, and we always look forward to communities that want us. One thing we want to make sure is when we show up that all the seats are full. So we want to make it a community event. We always have police, fire, we have community people out there. So it's designed to be a really fun time for everybody in the community. We have media come out. It's just a nice time for everybody. So if somebody wants to get involved, even besides this event, just shoot us a note, and that's how we look at where we go. We want to go to communities where they really want it, and so, just shoot us a note over, and we'll take it from there.
And again, that website is drivingskillsforlife.com.
Drivingskillsforlife.com, yes.
Perfect. Jim, thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday morning and joining us up here in Boston. And you never know, maybe I'll show up and hang around next weekend up in North Andover.
Well, we look forward to coming out, and thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? My name's John Paul. This is a Car Doctor program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. You can give us a call at 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
Brother Pellet's in the back, sweet singers in the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly, red blue lights flash us from behind. Loud voice booming.
Please. I gave a girl a ride in my wagon, and she crawled in and took control.
So do you want to go drive an electric car? You can do that tomorrow between 10 and 3 at Union Point in Weymouth. That's the old South Weymouth Navy base place over there. It is electric vehicles. They're doing an electric vehicle ride and drive. The Massachusetts Sierra Club, Mass Energy Consumers Alliance, and Union Point for an electric vehicle. It's all going on there. It's a ride-and-drive event. Learn from environmental groups, dealerships, EV owners, all about the benefits of driving electric and available discounts. Even go for a test ride. The ride-and-drive events will take place alongside Union Point's excellent, their words, not mine, farmers market featuring local produce, food trucks, specialty vendors, and live music. National Drive Electric Week is presented by Plug-In America, the Sierra Club, and the Electric Auto Association. And that is going to be taking place again in Union Point in South Weymouth. You can find out more information. I guess the Sierra Club has more information about it. And that's going to be Sunday from 10 to 3. So if you wanted to go check out an electric car, I was driving an electric car part of the last couple days. The new Nissan Leaf, which is new, improved, more horsepower, longer range. It's got about 150-mile range now. Very nice car, actually. We'll do a full review of that coming up in the near future. Let's see. Dennis has a note. Okay, that's not much of a note. I thought you had something important to say.
No, I just wanted to let
you
know.
Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah. And who doesn't like free food?
I love free food. Where is this free food?
Well, up in Woburn.
I'm not going to
at Woburn Toyota. They're having apparently it's their grand opening celebration. Free barbecue, ice cream, and a dunk tank.
Woo!
So I guess if you're up in the Woburn area and you're a little bit hungry,
sure,
pull in there and check it out.
Can I say something else about those Batmobiles that I saw?
Yeah, I guess.
They were the real legit Bat, like they could drive them off the lot, like, yeah, right then and there. And they said, which one did we think was the fastest? And the fastest one is the most current one.
Okay.
That it has two of the big Corvette engines in it.
Really?
Two.
Well,
it gets over 200 miles an hour or something like that with the two engines fully on.
I mean, that's interesting, I guess. But, you know, in the movie, they're probably going 3 miles an hour.
Well, they explained that, too.
Okay.
The cars around the car that you're seeing going fast are, yep, going like 2 to 3 miles an, yep, hour. And then the main car is doing like 30 miles an hour. So it looks like it's really
fast. So it looks like it's going fast.
And then they also speed up the film a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, does not surprise me from some of the stuff that I've seen. Yeah, yeah. So, got this message courtesy of some folks through Kia, and there is within a car now, it's actually a whole network of electronics. So it's called a CAN network, controller area network. And since 2011, Kia has been producing documents outlining issues that can occur with their controller area network equipped vehicles when certain devices are introduced into the electrical system. Kia is not unique in this problem. However, there are some drivability problems that can be very frustrating for technicians to diagnose. These can be remedied by identifying and removing these devices. In other words, like the snapshot thing from Progressive, you plug in and you get an insurance discount, stuff like that. The problem the devices can cause, they can cause problems, and so it's, they refer to them as a dongle, the thing that plugs in, and they can cause problems with the tire pressure monitor systems, too. So it can, apparently the frequency, it can turn the lights on. Also, there's some non-U.S. navigation infotainment devices that create noise on the tire pressure monitor frequency. So sometimes you want to add devices to your vehicle, and then all of a sudden something happens with it. I remember somebody gave me one of these devices to test out once, plugged it in, nothing happened, and about a day or so later, the traction control light came on. I'm like, and I called the company who made it, and they went, "Oh, it can't happen." So I unplugged it, traction control light went off. Plugged it back in, went on. So I said, "I think you have a problem. I think whatever's in this device is causing an issue with the electronics in the car." And that was a now 11-year-old car. So the idea that there are some of these devices that are causing problems. Volkswagen had a problem, well, many problems, but Volkswagen had a problem where you would plug in the Progressive snapshot thing. I think it's Progressive, right? Progressive.
Yes.
And Progressive. Snapshot thing. And it would cause the car to shift funny. And people were bringing their new Volkswagens back to the dealership and saying, well, it's not driving right. There's something wrong with it. And they'd unplug the thing and it'd be better. I always was suspicious it put it into the test mode where the EPA mileage got better. So by plugging it in, it actually tricked the computer system to think something else was going on. So it may have been a weird combination. So just saying. Just saying, that could happen. I have just a pair of tickets to the Newport Boat Show. Newport Boat Show is going to take place September 13th to the 16th, so next weekend. That's Thursday through Saturday, 10 to 6, Sunday 10 to 5. So I just have a pair of tickets, and I will give them away to the fifth caller. You were afraid I was going to say like 500th caller, right?
Yes.
Fifth caller. So if you're the fifth caller and you want a pair of tickets to the Newport Boat Show, call Dennis at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. It's the 48th annual Newport International Boat Show, and there's four sites over 13 acres, the Newport Yachting Center, Old Port Marine, Bannister's Wharf, and Bowen's Wharf. There's over 600 boats in the water, power and sail, keelboats to cruisers, hundreds of marine products. Concurrent with the Newport Brokerage Boat Show, so there's a bunch of stuff going on. It's also, let's see, what else is going on? United States Power Squadrons, America's Boating Club, hosting free educational seminars. You can buy tickets in advance. Tickets are kind of expensive, but if you are the whatever number I said, you can have a pair of tickets because I only got a pair. So GM says, will customers accept a full size truck with a 4-cylinder engine? A new 4-cylinder engine option for General Motors 2019 Silverado and GMC Sierra 1500 pickups will test the loyalty and perception of pickup buyers who associate inline fours with compact cars. A 4-cylinder engine and a full-size pickup was unimaginable a decade ago, but advancements in engineering as well as Ford Motor Company's success with the V6 EcoBoost engines have proved that V8 engines aren't necessarily the default choice for pickup buyers. The question is, how low can you go? A 2.7-liter inline 4-cylinder turbo engine is a major milestone for GM. It's the first 4-cylinder engine in a modern full-size pickup truck. And it's the first engine capable of actually running on just two cylinders. The engine is rated at 310 horsepower, 348 pound-feet of torque, or foot-pounds of torque, depending on how you say it. I say pound-feet. They say foot-pounds. It's paired with an 8-speed automatic transmission and will be standard on the new Silverado RST and popular Silverado LT, replacing the 4.3-liter V6 that's rated at 285 horsepower. So the six-cylinder engine had more horsepower than the old V8. So it'll be interesting to see where all this is going to go. I want to talk about the car that got me around a week or so ago, and that's the Nissan Armada. It's the largest of Nissan's SUVs. It's powered by a 5.6-liter, 390-horsepower V8 engine connected to a 7-speed automatic transmission. We have our winner. So if you were calling for the Newport Boat Show tickets, we have our winner. So we will mail those out to you first thing Monday morning. The Armada is available in rear-wheel or all-wheel drive. There's four trim levels, the SV, SL, Platinum Reserve, and the subject of our road test, the all-wheel drive Platinum version. This large SUV has seating for up to 8, and even adults will be pretty comfortable in the third-row seat. Like many three-row SUVs, getting to the third row can be a bit of a challenge. I watched people do it. I did not do it. I watched people get in the third row seat, and it was a bit of a challenge. The first two rows seats are comfortable and supportive. The third row is a bit short on padding. But during my time with the Armada, I had 6 adults in the vehicle, and they all seemed reasonably comfortable, at least for a fairly short trip. Safety is addressed with a full suite of semi-autonomous features, such as lane departure warning and backup cameras and around view monitors. I think I said automatic emergency braking for just everything you can imagine. This model also had something. I wish I really noticed it earlier. It has a camera for the rear view mirror. And it has a regular rear view mirror, looks like a rear view mirror. And when you flip what looks like the day-night switch, it turns to the camera view. So you can put 6 people in this car, and you go to look in the rearview mirror, and you can't see anything. You just see a bunch of heads. You flip the switch, and you actually see out the back. And it's like, where'd they go? And I didn't, it was so good, I didn't notice it for a couple of days because it was set on camera all the time. And all I noticed was, I think I was looking in the rearview mirror backing up one day, and I'm like, it doesn't look, is the back window dirty? You know, it wasn't the mirror image you expect, but it was actually pretty good. So, you know, I guess someday that will be the future, that there'll just be cameras and they'll display everywhere and there won't be side view mirrors or rear view mirrors. Like many large three rows SUVs, cargo behind the third row seat is a bit tight. There's 16 feet, but it expands to 95 feet with all the seats folded, so tons of room. Performance from the 5.6-liter V8 engine is very good. For those buyers looking to tow a vehicle, the Armada can tow a rather substantial 8,500 pounds. Engine performance comes at a fuel economy penalty. During my time with the Armada, I averaged about 14.5 miles per gallon. Ride and handling, typical of a big SUV, some body roll, slow steering. The ride is quite comfortable. With the Armada suspension soaking up all the ruts and potholes, the brakes are firm, powerful, good brake pedal feedback. The backup intervention system allows for easier parallel parking by applying the brakes if you don't. So a little bit of semi-autonomous features. Four-wheel drive system should be able to handle everything winter can throw at it. The Nissan Armada is not for everyone, but if you're looking for a stylish, powerful, full-size SUV, the Armada is a good choice. If you're willing to trade fuel economy for comfort, passenger space, and technology, the Armada by Nissan should be at the top of your list. 390-horsepower V8 engine, fuel economy 13 city, 18 highway. I did somewhere in the middle there. And price as tested, $66,000. Let's talk to Frank in Medford. Hello, Frank.
Morning, John Paul.
How are you?
Good. I had a question on the 2009 Chevy Traverse, the never-ending.
Yep, never-ending problem with your Traverse, yep.
This year now we're saying brought it back to the dealer because it was hesitating after, the time change.
Didn't it have a plug still misfiring, right?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, and then now he's saying that it's not historical or something, he's claiming that the reader on the AutoZone isn't correct or something like this here, that it's, but anyway, so he recommended to have a ear induction cleaning.
Okay.
And it's like a couple $100, right? He says those engines are noted for a carbon buildup or something. So I call my regular garage guy there, I asked him if he does it. So he tells me, he goes, oh, no, I don't do that at all. He says, you can blow the motor up when you do that. And I'm saying, like, really? And,
if you use the right chemicals, and there's a bunch of different, there's Snap-on makes the system, B&G makes it, there's a bunch of, and it was actually a pretty common thing a bunch of years ago. And what it does, it's a liquid, so in most cases you either disconnect the fuel system completely and you add this chemical cleaner, and what it does is it has a lot of chemicals in it, and it cleans out the carbon from the fuel injectors, it cleans out the carbon from the intake manifold, it cleans out the carbon from the back of the intake valves and the top of the pistons, and because of all of that, it smokes like crazy for a little bit, and then eventually it just sort of settles itself out and it's okay. What can happen is if you force too much of this cleaner in, or if you don't use cleaner at all, and back in the old days we used to pour water in an engine and it would do the same thing. You'd take the air cleaner off on a carbureted car. You take a coffee can full of water and you'd race up the engine and you pour the water down the carburetor and it would basically sort of steam clean the inside of the engine. The problem with that is if it was really badly carboned up, it would take the carbon off in chunks, and carbon's kind of what diamonds turn into, and carbon's really hard. So if you get a chunk of carbon that comes off the top of a piston and it bounces around inside the intake manifold and bounces around inside the combustion chamber, you can have some real problems. But if you use one of the good products, I don't see any engine problems happening. I just don't know whether it's going to fix the problem.
Right.
Yeah. I'm still not convinced you don't have a bad ignition coil, but
yeah. I just thought that they could pick it up on the codes. General Motors, code reader machine, whatever the computer is.
Yep.
But I think that, with the timing chain problem, they didn't really know until they tore it apart.
Right.
I mean, they said they thought it was that. First they denied it because it was an AutoZone reader. They said it was probably a timing chain, but then they put it on their machine, and then they actually took it apart because we tried to take the car back once they diagnosed it and said it was the timing chain. They said, well, you can't.
Whoops. Uh-oh. I think we disconnected. Are you still there? No, we disconnected you. Yeah, I think hopefully you still listen. The idea that they're not taking the AutoZone computer readout. It's just the computer readout is just, it's a scan tool. I think what they're trying to say is if it was a historical code, one that was in there from before versus an active code now, there could be the problem. So
that was my fault.
It was.
Getting used to the phones again here.
Yeah.
Sorry, Frank. Sorry.
So, but I still, Frank, I think what it comes down to is, the carbon cleaner may do some good, but I don't think it's going to do enough. I think you have something causing a real misfire, and I think someone needs to get in there, and they need to check the coils. They need to check the fuel injectors, maybe even do a compression test. I don't think so, but I don't think it's compression-related. The problem with the timing chain was kind of characteristic on that car, which is why it was replaced. But I think you need to be looking at spending somebody needs to do some work. And unfortunately, everything's behind the intake manifold, so it's a pain to get to. But I think someone's going to need to spend the time to do it. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. There was a three-wheel car called an Elio. And I like weird cars. I just do. And the Elio was, they took deposits. They looked at a bunch of things. But 5 years after raising his hand to takeover General Motors, closed a $3.4 million square foot assembly plant and stamping plant in Shreveport, Louisiana, Elio Motors is still putting together the funding to launch its fuel-efficient, low-price three-wheel vehicle. The startup based in Phoenix took over the plant in 2013 with the promise to bring 1,500 jobs and set vehicles into production to start in 2015. But raising necessary cash has been a slow process for Elio CEO Paul Elio. An investor presentation on Elio's website says the company raised $106 million through 2016. The site says it also raised $102 million, but last year the venture field a document with Securities and Exchange Commission said we must raise an estimated $376 million. Our anticipated production timetable is dependent on receiving such funding in a timely manner, and delays in obtaining additional funding will delay our production timetable. They've been trying to build this thing for a long time. It's a little three-wheel, fuel-efficient, kind of interesting-looking kind of thing, and it was going to be the future in 2008. And I've seen their prototype, and once upon a time, I tried to actually get them on the radio show, and all I got back was, they're not doing interviews. So, I don't know. So, there's a company called Mahindra, and Mahindra is trying to build a Jeep. And they said after a unsuccessful attempt to enter the U.S. auto market as an import-only diesel pickup brand in 2010, India's Mahindra and Mahindra has come back with a different plan. It'll launch a U.S. vehicle manufacturing at ground zero of the American auto industry in Detroit. It's a rare play for an automaker wanting to get into the U.S. market. For the past 30 years, new competitors have shunned Detroit as a marketing site. The last non-Detroit three automaker to open up assembly in the Detroit area was Mazda in 1987. In a product-sharing deal with then-Ford owner, So it looks like they want to build this Jeep. The problem is it looks like a three-quarter scale Jeep Wrangler. And I think Jeep has already kind of put out a cease and desist order saying, hey, it looks too much like our Jeep. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. Why don't we take another break? Our phone lines are open if you want to join us. Dennis won't cut you off, really. 617-770-3030. 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
Just give me some of your love. She said, I don't want your Chevrolet. I don't want your Chevrolet. I don't want nothing in the world you got. No, you can't do nothing for me. You can't do nothing for me. I buy you a diamond ring. I buy you a diamond ring. I buy you a diamond ring. If you just give me some of your love.
WROL or 100.3 FM or WROLradio.com or any number of other places. There was an article in this week's Automotive News, and what caught my attention was Ernie Bach Jr. And it says, Ernie Bach Jr. is always a maverick, went his own way in the Great Recession, sticking with fat advertising budget he pegged in the tens of millions of dollars annually, even as other auto dealers slashed advertising and saved costs. I didn't back down. Ernie's 60, by the way.
Is he really 60?
Yeah, that's what it says. How did it turn out? He said, I got killed. So, but sales plummeted, but it was more an investment in my future. My market share position didn't change. Before the recession, we were number one in New England with Honda, number one in New England with Toyota, and we're still there after the recession ended, and number one in New England. Bach said the decision was his as the head of a privately held Bach Automotive in Norwood, Mass., but executive manager also supported the idea. I was president and CEO. We didn't have a board. I have my people. People left and right were bailing out of advertising, but I continued on a high level, at a very high level. I normally advertise at Bach said. I knew we'd probably come out of this, share is probably most important thing in retail. Bach pursued the same strategy with completely different short-term results with Subaru of New England, the independent distributorship for the six New England states, which remains a crown jewel of Bach's assets. It's kind of confusing with there's Bach Toyota and Bach Honda, which really aren't his. He sold that business.
Yeah, he sold it three or four years ago?
3 or 4 years ago. But he still does all the advertising for them. But I think he's still, and that was part of the contract.
And he owns the land.
But I think he may have been buying a couple more dealerships, and he does still own the Ferrari.
Yeah, and he gets he's the distributor for Subaru.
Right. Yeah.
So any Subaru you get.
And he pointed out here somewhere, he said, meanwhile, Subaru defied gravity. It was the only major brand whose sales improved year after year, straight through the Great Recession. Bach said the props go to Tom Dahl, CEO of Subaru of America, for making the brand cool and desirable, and to management in Japan for tailoring cars and crossovers, specifically to U.S. tastes. At Subaru, I got to tell you, we thought we were going to get killed, but we were in meetings after the first couple of months of the recession, looking around at each other and saying, we're up, and sales were up. We're the only manufacturer whose sales improved during the recession. It's fair to say that Subaru of New England has historically had higher market share of the brand. But why I brought this up, at the New England Motor Press meeting back in May, we gave an award to Tom Dahl, the president and CEO of Subaru of North America, and Ernie Bach was there to actually present the award to him. And he said almost the same thing as he said here. I owe my success to Tom Dahl because Tom Dahl really worked through some advertising campaigns. So it was sort of interesting. I introduced a local Subaru dealer who's been doing a good job and does a ton with charity. That person introduced Ernie Bach. Ernie Bach introduced the president of Subaru. And everybody was very complimentary. And my group was honestly a little bit afraid of what Ernie would do. Because Ernie's a lightning rod for a track. And he was polite, good guy. He had his speech literally handwritten out. He did it himself. He did a great job.
Can I just mention about Subaru real
quick? Sure.
Because we drove around in a Subaru for a week out in California. The last time I got in a Subaru before this, it was cramped. I could barely fit into it. I did not like the experience at all. This one, I think my mom, because my mom and my son went out a couple days before us, so she's the one that rented it. I think it was a Subaru Forester. It was a
Forester.
The bigger one.
Yep.
That was nice. Like, I didn't feel the road like it.
Yeah, no, Subarus have improved dramatically over
amazing.
The years.
Amazing. And the gas mileage we got on that thing was, I drove from L.A. to Burbank, Burbank back to L.A., and then L.A. to San Diego. And before we went out to, and then from San Diego to Palm Springs. And then before we returned back to L.A. was the first time I had to get gas.
Wow.
It was amazing. Granted, the tank is huge, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. That's all good. Let's talk to John in Wakefield. Dennis was doing so good there for a while. John, is that you?
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question on the risk factor, or maybe some pitfalls on, for example, buying an older car like a 2002 Mercury Grand Marquis with 57,000 miles on it that hasn't been started or moved for a year and a half.
I think part of it depends on how much you're paying for it.
To make,
chances are the engine's fine. Chances are the transmission is probably okay. The brakes are probably, is it been inside or outside?
It's in a garage.
In a garage, yeah. Okay. So the brakes are probably mildly rusty from sitting in place. If it was sitting outside, you'd probably need to think about all the brakes in the car just needing to be replaced, and you still might. But as far as, a lot of it's going to depend on how it was put away. If it was just driven into a garage and shut off, you may have a few problems coming up with it. And also, if it was put in a garage and shut off and that garage attracted critters like mice and chipmunks and stuff, you always have to worry about wiring getting chewed up and stuff like that. But if I said, hey, I'm looking for a car, this thing only has 50,000 miles on it, I would get the car, get it started. I would probably add some gasoline antifreeze and some stable to the gas, but what I'd really want to do is try to drain the gas tank and get a full tank of fresh fuel in there. I would probably think about changing the fuel filter in case there's any rust in there. And then I would change change the fluids, I would at least change the oil. I'd want to look at the transmission fluid. I'd want to look at the power steering fluid. I'd change the engine coolant because sitting there is not doing it any good. And I'd probably, if the brakes are working properly, so they're not dragging, they're working the way they should, I'd probably change the brake fluid just because from sitting around like that, it could have attracted some moisture. So I'd at least suck the brake fluid out of the master cylinder and put some fluid in it. But as far as having problems with, the engine, going bad, a valve sticking in it, you'd know that as soon as it started up. Now, Now, not to say that a 2000, what'd you say, 2002 or so?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, not to say that a 15-year-old car is going to have its own share of problems anyway. So you could have a valve, you could have valve seals that have dried up in it a little bit. So you could get, you know, you could get a little bit of oil consumption. But chances are it's going to be okay. You know, it's at the end, it's at the end of what, you know, what things can go bad when you're, you know, when things sit still. So, but, you know, could, you know, shock absorbers have rusted up? If we're sitting outside, I have a lot more concern about it. Sitting inside, I don't have quite as many concerns.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you're gonna need a battery, and you know, you might start it up, and the alternator may be kind of acting up a little bit because the brushes in the alternator are sticking, and you might have an alternator light. But maybe racing the engine a little bit, the light goes out because the brushes stop sticking. It's gonna be things. It's gonna be things like that. You know, the you know, is it possible that over time that something happened to the air conditioner? Maybe, but you never know. You might put a battery in it, start it up, and the thing runs like a champ.
I was just majorly concerned over inner engine problems.
Yeah, what are they looking to get for it?
Probably about $3,500.
Yeah. It sounds a little on the high side to me. But I think it, you know, and as far as you know, it hasn't been running. They haven't tried to start it up or anything, or.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't been started in a year and a half.
Yeah, I think I
probably won't even start.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'd want to. You know, for you're taking a chance at $3,500 with a car that you don't even know how it runs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I think for $3,500, it sounds, you know, unless the thing is absolutely stunning. And for $3,500, knowing you're going to need a tow truck to tow it to your garage to have them go through it, it sounds a little bit overpriced.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay?
Thanks for the information,
All right.
John.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye.
617-770-3030, 617-770-3030 is how you get through and talk to us. Cadillac throws in the towel on a 3-Series Fighter. This was not a surprise to me. Cadillac will scrap the ATS, the smallest sedan, after the 2018 model year, but will continue the ATS Coupe. I have no idea why, because I don't think anybody's buying those either. Production of the ATS sedan is ending due to extensive plant upgrades, expansion, and retooling to prepare for the next generation of Cadillac sedans, according to their spokesperson. They'll consist of 3 sedans positioned in different segments and clearly differentiated by size and price. The compact ATS, midsize CTS, and large XTS will be replaced by 2 new sedans. One of the new sedans is expected to come out next year. The CT6 will remain Cadillac's flagship, beginning with the new XT4 compact crossover that goes on sale this fall. Cadillac says it's planned to launch a new model every 6 months through 2021. I don't know how many times I've heard car manufacturers say we're going to launch a new model every 6 months for the next 5 years. And they end up launching 2 because they find out, well, that didn't work. But we'll have to wait and see. The new XT6 3-row crossover expected to be next after the XT4. When Cadillac unveiled the ATS in 2012 at the Detroit Auto Show, the brand touted the car as equal to the best of Germany's small luxury sedans, such as the BMW 3 Series, Audi A4, Mercedes C-Class. It was Cadillac's first small car since the...
I have no idea.
And that is going to be trivia.
Oh, my goodness.
And... I think we'll just give out a regular trivia prize, but we have 2 things going on. But anyway, what was the name of Cadillac's first small compact sedan? If you know the answer, give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. What was the little Cadillac called? It was an awful car, which is why they stopped making it.
Was it like the size of the Fiero?
It's a kind of, but it was an awful car. We'll just call it that. It was actually built on the same platform as the Chevrolet Cavalier, which was also an awful car.
Yes.
So if you know the answer to that, give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. But I'm also having a prize drawing. This requires no work on Dennis's part. So he has nothing to do with the prize drawing. So you can either write to me here, care of the radio station, where apparently I get mail once in a while, and our so you know, Car Doctor, care of WROL Radio, 500 Victory Road, Quincy, Mass. 02171, and you can say enter me into the contest to win, or you can email me at jpaul@aaanortheast.com, jpaul@aaanortheast.com. And the prize is a scale model of Bob Tasca's funny car. I have a scale model of Bob Tasca's funny car, and it's very well done. And we will send you this scale model funny car. It doesn't run or anything. It's a model. So, but I have one, and it's actually his previous generation funny car. Previous generation. It's technically, I guess, an alcohol car, and it is. In fact, how I found it was I was cleaning my desk, and there at the bottom of a file cabinet drawer, there it sat. And back when we had the Ford AAA Auto Skills, I had Bob come to one of the dinners one night. And he actually gave out two of these cars to the students, and he autographed them. And he gave one to me. He said, I want you to have one too. But I'm gonna give it away. And I forgot I actually had it until I was going through some stuff. So I actually had it. In fact, I've been kind of cleaning out. We're moving our office space at work. I don't know where we're going, somewhere in the building. So I've been kind of going through stuff, and I had a bunch of Hemmings cars, where I also have some at home as well. But they say Hemmings Motor News on the side of them, and I had a bunch of them sitting on a file cabinet. And one of our truck drivers is. It has a son who's very interested in cars, and he's, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old or something like that. And I gave him a car once before, and he had his father take a picture of him and put the picture in a card and wrote me a thank you note. And now he wants to build a diorama. So I gave him a few more cars, and I also, back from quite vintage, 2002, I have a little Hemmings gas station that's about 18 inches long, and I gave him that. So it's kind of funny. On the way home from work, he called me up and he said, "Hey, John, it's John B. Are you sure you want to give these away? These are nice." And I said, no, I want you to have them. Your son really appreciates them. And his son, maybe his son's 10. And his son actually got into an argument with his teacher at school because his teacher said something about naming some kind of Dodge or something. And he said Belvedere. And his teacher said, there's no such thing as a Belvedere. And he said, yes, there is. So he had to, like, get a book and prove it wrong. Okay. So what was the small Cadillac called? Let's talk to Peter. Peter, do you have an answer?
Yeah, the Catella?
No. No, but that was also an awful car. And I don't know, and I'm probably the only one who actually remembers this, but I think it was a lawyer TV show. I don't remember what it was called. And okay. And the lead character, one of the characters in it, was Lisa Katera. And okay. And I'm like, come on. And it was sponsored by Cadillac. So all they were trying to do was constantly get people to go, I think I need the Lisa Katera. But right. that was also an awful car, but not as awful as this one. But thanks for calling in.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Let's talk to, looks like... Mike and Hingham. Michael? Michael? No? Are you there, Michael? Maybe not. Let's go to, let's go down to Kevin.
Hello?
Kevin.
Hello? Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you? So what do you think this, what do you think this awful Cadillac was?
Well, I think it was a glorified Vega. It was a Celeron.
Well, it was a glorified Cavalier, but you're close enough. Yeah. It was a, and it was, I remember actually seeing one at, when I went to General Motors School. They would have all the newest products at General Motors School. And when I was there, they had a Cadillac, Cadillac there, and it had wind up windows and a stick shift. I'm like, how can this thing even be a Cadillac? You know, with the, and not that you can't have a sporty Cadillac, and that's fine. But this thing had the 4-cylinder Cavalier engine in it, and it was awful. So
it really was an embarrassment.
It really was, and you know, they were trying to come up with something, and you know you have to wonder what were they thinking at the time, because it wasn't particularly well thought out when they came up with it. But I'll tell you what, stay right there. We'll send you out some kind of prize and go from there.
I loved that interview with Bob Chaska. I was up at Epping a few weeks ago, and I saw him up there. And I'm glad to see he's making waves in that division.
Yeah, he really is. You know, his previous division, he was number one. And now when he stepped up to this, you know, just, you know, more horsepower, more power, more, and what it comes down to is more money. You know, and you know, Ford left him for a while. I remember talking to his father, you know, Bob II, and he said, I said, so what's up with Ford pulling out of racing? And he said, we don't want to do it, but we might have to put Chrysler on the front of our race car. And that never happened. He managed to keep it a Ford, because they are a Ford family, and he readily admits he's a Ford kid. So, and not so much a kid anymore, but still, he is making some waves in that. And you know, he's a local guy who, you know, he's always in the running somewhere. So, and he is listed as having some of the quickest reaction times of any driver out there. He is, when that light changes, I don't know how he does it. And he said to me one day, anybody who tells you going down the racetrack that they can see, that they think about it, they're lying to you, because he said when you're going 0 to 330 miles an hour in under 3.5 seconds, you don't have time to think about anything. And and the other thing he told me, which was kind of interesting, was, you know, he has a lot of experience driving this car, but if you add it all up at 3 seconds at a time, you know, he's probably got 8 minutes worth of experience.
Yeah, yeah. I think it, from being up there, I think that was the only Ford represented in that top funny car.
Yeah, it may have been. And then our buddy Brian Loans from Abington did some of the tower work up there. So I feel like it was all family. So good for you for knowing it was a Cimarron. And Dennis will get your address, and we'll send you out something, okay?
Yeah, thanks. Great
right.
show, John.
All right, thank Bye-bye. You. Bye-bye. We need to take a break, pay some bills. We'll let Dennis do that. Let Dennis take care of. He's doing everything. I'm going to take a little nap. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. We will be back with Bobby Brooks and the Irish Hit Parade coming up in not, like 8 minutes. We'll be right back.
There's only one car that I need. It's been in the comfort and it's been in the feet. American classic that I want to ride. Ride around, ain't gonna hide.
Don't you see what the song was? That's all. Old and heavy, I want to ride a 56 Chevy. Okay, now I know. We've gotten some obscure car music in there, and I don't know where it came from, actually, but...
Not from me.
I think it might have come from Jeff.
It has to be Jeff.
Yeah. Does Jeff still work here?
I have no idea.
Yeah. I know. How would you know? Because he worked like a weird overnight. And mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was a good guy. Korean brands nab top three J.D. Power quality surveys. Genesis topped its annual U.S. report card on the 2018 new car quality, followed by Kia in second and Hyundai in third, making the first time South Korea's cheap brands have topped the closely watched J.D. Power initial quality survey. Porsche and Ford brand rounded out the top five. At the bottom were Land Rover, Jaguar, Volvo with their complex infotainment system. Yeah, you put too much junk in a car, and it confuses the buyer, and then it doesn't work right, or they don't think it works right, and you wonder why. And I've been saying it for a while, too much touchscreen stuff, too many things. Porsche, who actually has an electric car, bought a 10% stake in a company called Rimac, a Croatian startup that specializes in super-fast electric supercars. Porsche said the main focus is supplying high-voltage battery technology, electric powertrains, and development of digital interfaces between man and machine. Man, digital interface, robot uprising.
It's going to happen.
It is. Volkswagen and Ford are exploring development and production alliances for commercial vehicles, including vans. Possibly other projects that could strengthen both companies. Ford said automakers have signed a memorandum of understanding. So, and one of the most interesting Ford lawsuits out, professional wrestler John Cena. You're a wrestling fan? You know who he is?
Yeah. You can't see me.
Yeah.
The champ is here.
He has settled with Ford for an undisclosed amount following the automaker's lawsuit against him for the sale of his 2017 liquid blue GT supercar. What happens was when you bought this very limited production $500,000 supercar, the Ford GT, part of the deal was you couldn't sell it. You had to buy it and keep it because they didn't want people, because they sold them at, in theory, what the sticker price was on the car. And they didn't want people profiting from buying the car. So John Cena probably bought one and sold it. And Ford sued him and said, you broke the sales contract that came with the car. You can't resell it. And I guess Ford won, and they're giving the money to charity. So good for them.
Good on them.
Yeah. So.
So the other thing I wanted to mention about California, sorry, my son was obsessed with taking pictures of cars that he can see out there that he can't see in here. And there was a ton of Bentleys and Rolls Royces.
Yep.
There was a Rolls Royce parked at a mall area that we went to, roped off, and it had a sticker price on there. He went to touch the car. I told him, don't you dare put a finger on that car. And he's like, why? I had him look at the sticker price. Sticker price was $375,000. My son was just like, I'm not even breathing on the car.
I had one of those in my driveway.
Yeah, and I told him that you drove one once. He was like, what?
Yeah, and you know, a car that, you know, it was interesting. Well, it was in my driveway. It, you know, more than doubled the price of my house. So
exactly.
You know, so, and I, you know, I live pretty simple. It's not like, you know, so, but anyway. Hey, standing behind you is Bobby Brooks. He's standing right there. He's standing right there. He's...
Good morning, good doctor.
Good morning.
And lovely bride. Nice to see both of you.
Well, we just thought we'd come in and hang around. I haven't been in the studio as much. You know, I've been kind of broadcasting from the kitchen table a lot lately, so thought we'd come into the studio today.
Because I was back.
Because Dennis was back. Wanted to see him in person. Yeah. And Paul Sullivan, you said, is at a family wedding.
Paul and I communicated during the middle of the week. He's at a family wedding, so it's all good stuff. And, you know, I know we were sharing this when, you know, during one of the last commercial breaks. And when I know in advance that I have to do this, I have these crazy dreams at night. My last night dream was when I got to the studio and they moved WROL. The studio wasn't there. And Pat Ryan was here, said we had a big meeting. It was 10 minutes of 10. I said, I got a show to do. And I wake up like in a sweat.
Yeah, I you know, it's you know, you fill in pretty regularly. You're here pretty regularly.
Yep.
I'm here every Saturday, but still I do the same thing. I get, you know, still, even though I've been here for 11 years, I was at another station for 10. I was at another station for a couple before that. It's still every time the microphones come on. And I got to tell you, after being here for 90 minutes, I'm tired.
Yeah, sure,
you know,
yeah.
So it is, you know, it has a little bit of stress to it. It's always fun. You get to play great Irish music.
It's a lot of fun.
And you get to also you know, talk with our listeners in between, which is always nice when you get to see what's going on with them and what they're looking for. And you know, same thing, I try to offer up a little advice, a little bit of entertainment, and it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, it's great. We talked about the whole Cadillac thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, you know, Paul Sullivan always says to me, you know, I love that, you know, that few minutes we do together, you know, at the end, he says it's fun. So
it is fun.
Yeah. So filling in for Professor Paul Sullivan is our buddy Bobby Brooks.
Oh, good.
And he is, and we know, speaking of our other Irish hosts, we know they're all going to be listening online.
I know.
You know, Johnny Costello, right now, I bet saying his name, he's listening very minute.
Jumping through the streets in Dorchester.
That's right. Delivering the mail, listening online. So the very best in Irish music coming up with Bobby Brooks and the Irish Hit Parade. Irish music for the rest of the day right here on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. Till next week, wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.